The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman, and I'm joined by my two co-hosts today, Nathan Gladwell and Brett Oldenburg. It was a big weekend in college basketball, rivalry games going on all around the country, but the biggest one being Alabama hosting the Auburn Tigers. But Auburn gets the best of the Tide, beats them 94-85. And what was really not a close game throughout the entirety of it, but ended up with an Auburn 9-point win with Alabama fighting back late in that second half. So I ask you, Gray, how was Alabama or Auburn able to go into Alabama and beat them?
Well, it starts on the defensive end. Alabama is one of, if not the best offensive team in terms of scoring in the country. They still scored 85 points in this game because you're not going to be able to stop them. But what Auburn was able to do containing them and certain aspects of this game was outstanding. A great game plan from Stephen Pearl, who's the defensive coordinator and associate head coach of this team. And it all starts with how Denver Jones played, man. What a week for Denver Jones. Not only did he had his worst game against Florida last Saturday. It was worst game probably of his entire college career because he averaged 20 at FIU and has been very good at Auburn so far, and then wins SEC Player of the Week the next week. And what he did against Vandy, and then what he did defensively against Mark Sears and Aiden Holloway, two guys who have been playing fantastic down the stretch for Alabama, especially the past few games. Aiden Holloway and Mark Sears have really been able to get whatever they want. They've been shooting incredibly efficiently. Denver Jones just absolutely shut that down. He was fantastic on the ball. He 100% deserves to be on the Naismith all-defensive team, a straight quote from Bruce Pearl's post-game press conference in this, and that's where the defense started. And then the impressive thing about this Auburn team is they just continue to prove why they're the best team in the country. Is this is the team that we watched in November beat Houston in the Toyota Center. And this is the same team that we watched blow through the Maui Invitational. This is the same team we watched absolutely annihilate Purdue in Birmingham and just dismantle Ohio State in Atlanta. And this is that team, the team with the edge that was unstoppable at the beginning that we haven't seen since Jani Broome's injury against South Carolina. And that was that's kind of unfortunate for Alabama that they kind of ran into a team that had finally got their edge back, especially on the defensive end. But another thing is how efficient and how many different ways this Auburn offense can beat you. They're incredibly deep. They've got five guys, in my opinion, that can all go for 20 points at any point in any game against anybody. And you think about some of the teams that not only this year, but in the past few years, they've gone on to have success, whether that's win a championship, or win a conference championship, or have success relative to their program. They've all had multiple guys that can do that, but also in different ways. You want to run in transition against this Auburn team? Fine. They'll run in transition. You want to jack threes? Fine. We'll jack threes. They can beat you there. You can beat you inside. They can beat you in the mid-range. Beat you in the pick and roll game. Their flex action is absolutely fantastic. Bruce Pearl's been known for that ever since he was at Tennessee. What he's done with the personnel that this Auburn team has. And I can't sit here and say enough about what this Auburn team has done this year. They're 14-2 in quad one. Bubba Cunningham, the head of the committee, the chair of the committee this year, when announcing the top 16 seeds earlier, said, he was asked, because it was before this game was played, he was asked, Alabama is the number two overall seed. If Alabama were to win today, would that jump Auburn? No. Auburn has a larger gap on the number one overall seed than anybody since past 7 years of doing this a month out preview of the number one overall seed. I would be absolutely shocked. It would take a complete collapse for this Auburn team not to be a one seed come selection show in March. But fantastic win. This team's got their edge back, man. I tell you, the crowd that really struggled, Alex and Nathan, this past week, and it's not the Alabama fans, because Alabama fans who really know ball like y'all do and really understand ball. No, Auburn's an unbelievable team. Alabama's got an unbelievable schedule moving forward. Alabama's going to be just fine. And they can't wait for that matchup in Neville as well. But the crowd that kept saying that Auburn was peaking in November and then peaking in December and then peaking in early January really, really struggled on Saturday night because, you know, it's mid-February. It's time to buck up and play college basketball and against the best of the best. And Alabama knows it. You see that schedule moving forward. Auburn's got a heck of a schedule as well. Those are the top two strength of schedule teams in the country right now. And they're two of the top two teams record-wise as well. It's crazy. But that group really, really struggled on Saturday, right? Watching Auburn go into Coleman and walk away with a win.
Nathan, I'll ask you with the Crimson Tide. They go down 9-0 early in this game, and they really couldn't recover. They had that one time where they ended up tying it, but then Auburn, it was an avalanche from them. What happened in Alabama in this game? Because this is a home game. You see the schedule coming up. This is a must-win game for the Crimson Tide. What happened to them in this matchup after going 2-0 last year against the Tigers?
Well, you start off with a slow start. You basically allowed wide-open three-pointers. You just ran in. And I think the biggest thing you point out on the box score there is Jani Broom making two of his four three-pointers. And you look at Mark Sears and it's like, oh, he's, what, 2 of 11? So there's the issue, number one, when you're one of your best scorers cannot make threes. And of course, Auburn has one of the best scorers who normally doesn't take outside shots hitting at a very efficient clip. It's going to be hard to win. But really breaking down the game, starting and looking at it, they got off to a really good start. Alabama fell behind early, and it just struggled to catch up. Finally, we were able to tie it close to the end of the first half, and you go under three, and Auburn just says, okay, we're going to take over. We're going to extend this lead, jump back out to a nine-point lead at halftime. Roy just kept their momentum, and Roy pressed into the second half, getting into a double-digit lead, over a 14-point lead. Auburn was in control of this game, and Alabama made really good kill shots, which is a metric where you're on a scoring run really over 10 points or more. Alabama had a big scoring run of 12-0, which really were able to get them back in the game and allowed them to tie it. But when you got to those points, you weren't able to take the lead. And I really attribute that to the poor shot selection at times and really Auburn picked up on defense. They just would not relinquish the lead. Auburn is very experienced when it comes to being able to control the lead. They don't go on a lot of runs. I would say they're not a streaky team, but they also don't typically give up a lot of runs. And against a team like Alabama, you're going to have it happen, but it's more of how you can control the lead as you go forward. And Auburn was able to do that. That was a big thing. Roy, Alabama was not comfortable at all. I didn't see any comfortability throughout the game on the offensive end. Like Gray said, credit to Denver Jones and the way he played against Mark Sears primarily. Had him in a chokehold. He fought through screens, which is another thing. Alabama did not set screens well at all. I don't know what they do in practice, but they just let the guards go right on through. Mark Sears has zero separation on a lot of the drives he took. And then you break down when you were able to get into the paint and do stuff. You weren't hitting at a good enough clip to where you could catch up to Auburn. Because, I mean, they were not missing shots. The close shots that Jani Broom took that would just roll on the rim. And then it happened for Dylan Cardwell as well. So when you have those moments happening, you're going to have some extraordinary three-point shooting. Well, obviously, we didn't shoot through well at all. It was horrid. And I think after the Texas game, you kind of figured they use up their best game on the wrong team, honestly. and that's kind of what it felt like. But really in the second half, I mean, they traded back and forth punches. I really thought that at that time, Alabama was able to get the momentum that they needed to really surge and take the lead and maybe end up winning the game. But again, you fall to the level of your systems, and the system Bruce Pearl has in place at Auburn is absolutely incredible. It's why they're the best team in the country. It's why I said it all last week. It's why I've repeated it for months on end now that this is the best team in the country because of the way Bruce Pearl has been able to catch this team up. Even with Jahni Broome getting hurt and Chad Baker-Mazzara fouling out, the guys that were able to come in, Dahad Pettiford having insane layups. Just I don't even know how he made some of the shots he made. They were circus shots, but they went in. But the systems were there for every single personnel that came in for Auburn. And that's really the big difference. The energy level was there. You don't see people who may not be involved on the offensive end not hustling on the defensive end. It's one team. Everyone is playing for a common goal, and that is a big thing for Auburn going forward. Alabama in this game, it could have been really different. You really capitalized on what you needed to do. I mean, you doubled the offensive rebounds. You limited turnovers. You only had 7 all game. Mm-hmm. So things that were a consistent problem weren't a consistent problem. But what it came down to, you weren't able to shoot the 3-ball well. You weren't able to convert on a lot of your layups, and you missed free throws. That's a big thing in these types of games when it comes down to the stretch. When it's a close game, comes to 10 points or fewer, you're going to have to be able to convert in several different moments, and they weren't able to accomplish that. And that's the reason Auburn walked away with a win. I think Alabama definitely has the ceiling to be the top 10 in the country, but they're not consistent enough. They haven't proven it. And their floor, it's very good, but it's definitely not the best team in the country. And the way they played Saturday, they didn't look a top 5 team to me. And that's just being honest. But I give credit to Nate Oates and the way he did prepare the team, because it wasn't a lack of preparation. I felt like the system he had in place was very, very well. It wasn't executed properly, and that comes down to the players. Marcier's has to be better. I mean, you're supposed to be this first-team All-American. You're supposed to be the leader of this team, and you're out there shooting 4-for-17. That's horrid. That's something I'd never want to see. And the fact that he continued to have such poor shot selection, especially going into the second half, really made me mad. I felt bad for a guy named Holloway who really didn't get to experience the game at all, because he spent a lot of time on the bench in foul trouble, and that is something that really hurts the team. I don't feel like we've had enough shooting out there. We should have gotten Chris Youngblood more involved. He's been one of the best shooters down the stretch of this SEC conference play. We didn't get him involved enough. Grant Nelson took really stupid shots at times, and Jaron Stevenson, coming off a heater ice game, I thought maybe he'd get to see the ball more, but overall he didn't, and he had some terrible situations. He missed a wide open put back dunk. And really stuff like that kills momentum. Missing layups, stuff like that's not a recipe for success. And obviously it proved that in the score. But going forward, Alabama has to stay focused on the task at hand. They don't get an easier schedule after this. You keep playing really, really good teams. So you just got to switch your focus and move on to the next team. This one sucks. You wanted to win this game. You wanted to prove that you were the better team. But that's just not the way it worked out. You got to consistently be able to take care of business against these other teams. You'll get another shot at Auburn and Neville to finish out the regular season. But you got to take it one game at a time from here on out.
Nathan, one thing you didn't talk about there was the continual dropping on screens, Cliff Amore, Mo Diabate, Grant Nelson. Throughout the entirety of the first half, they would drop on the screen. Miles Kelly, Denver Jones, whoever would fly off the screen, be wide open for the three-point shot and make it. And in the second half, it was the same thing. Drop coverage. But the thing that baffles me is when you play drop coverage and still get beat to the basket. There was like 3 or 4 times I watched Cliff Amore go under the screen, play drop coverage, and get beat directly to the basket. If you're going to play drop coverage, the one thing you can't do is get beat to the basket. Alabama fans on Twitter are talking about Nate Oates' system on offense, live and die by the three-pointer, how bad that's been, how he needs to change it, and the defense, you know, how poor that is. But in your eyes, what was wrong with the defense and the offense in this game?
Number one, I don't think we're live and die by the three team. I mean, we didn't shoot the 3-ball well, but we also missed a ton of layups. I mean, obviously, I don't even think we took more threes than Auburn did. So that obviously throws that out the window. Offensive fault already went through that. But as far as defense goes, ever since we had Charles Fediako, we decided we're going to play drop coverage on every single screen known to man. That is just a poor defensive plan, in my opinion. I've always hated it. I always think help off screens is a big thing. Playing sides is a big thing. And when you leave your guards on an island, yes, you expect them to be able to fight through, but it's hard. I mean, Jani Broom is a huge guy. He can set really, really good screens. And the same thing with Dylan Corbo. They have a lot of people who are very strong and can set well-set screens. And unfortunately, Clifford Moore doesn't fit the mold of a guy who can play direct coverage. Sure, he has a long wingspan, but he's not overly fast. He doesn't really provide a lot of perimeter contest if he does help up a little bit. It was a guy more in Mo Diabate who I figured it would be a better option. But unfortunately, Mo Diabate is undersized to play against Jani Broom. So it's kind of it was a crappy situation. And really, I think a guy who fits him all well is Grant Nelson, but he can't not play defense. He cannot play defense. I don't know what it is about him. He cannot figure it out, whether it be perimeter, whether it be interior. He's just an absolute liability anywhere you put him. Jaren Stevens is another guy I thought he could play, but we never really tested him out in that situation. And I think, really, that's more towards him not being strong enough to guard Jani Broom. Diabate, I thought, provided the best chance, but he also ended up getting in foul trouble early on. We didn't really see him in the second half. But for guys like Clifford Morey, this lats days ago defense where you just sit in the paint and you're not really able to get back. It's not working. And it really makes me think back to this summer when we were in the transfer portal and looking for guys and we landed on Clifford Morey. Was there someone better off we could have gotten that could have fit the mold better to really play defense in the paint? I mean, it's been crappy all year. We've been one of the worst teams at giving up 2-point shots. And while some of that comes from the mid-range, a lot of that comes from the paint. Our paint protection has been horrible. And you're going to play against teams who really know how to attack the paint. You just played one and you lost. So now is the time to really figure out how you're going to fix it. Are you going to consistently play drop coverage, which I think we will end up doing? Or are you going to actually end up hustling on defense? Are you going to really provide 100% effort when it's needed? I think that's the bigger thing to point out is the personnel wasn't executing the proper systems. I don't think the system's right, but the system does work. It has been shown to work at times. And really it starts with the personnel hustling. And I didn't really see that Saturday. And that's one of the big reasons why we lost. It frustrates me because Miles Kelly was basically just target practice. It was target practice for him. He was wide open every single time. And that's a guy you cannot leave wide open. Same thing for Denver Jones. Auburn's guards were having a field day because there is no one coming over the screen to really guard them. And that is a big difference. And why Auburn was able to shoot the three ball so well is because they're not taking contested shots. They're not taking ISO shots. They're taking wide open off the screen shots. Yeah. I mean, and a team like that is going to be able to hit that at a consistent clip. This isn't some poor 3-point shooting team. They're the best offense in the country by KenPom ratings. You got to respect that.
Yeah, that's true, and that's a good point that Nathan brought up. I think that's one of the big reasons. Last week I said I don't think Alabama matches up well with Auburn, because there's not a guy that can guard Jani Broom on the inside. I do think the best guy for that opportunity is Mo Diabate, but he's extremely undersized compared to Jani Broom and even Dylan Cardwell. Grant Nelson is not a guy that's going to be able to guard Jani Broom. And I don't think Clifford Morey can guard Jani Broom in the post as well. But what Auburn did so well offensively, and you credit Mike Burgermaster to this, the offensive coordinator for Auburn, is drop coverage. Okay. We're going to abuse that. And Nathan brought up a good point there. It's not like it's just and you brought this up too, Alex. It's not just, you know, coming off the screen and burying a three from Miles or Chad or Denver or Tahad or one of those guys. It's Clifford Morey is 4 feet behind the screener, and he's still getting beat to the basket by Tahad Petter. And not only is he still getting beat to the basket, but Tahad is scoring over him multiple times. I mean, poor Aiden Holloway got put in a horrible situation late in the game off of a screen because Aiden's trying to catch up after being screened to Tahad Pettifer, who's just as fast, if not faster than him anyway. And Clifford Omori and Grant Nelson are just standing in the paint and they're not doing anything. And Tom Pettiford's good enough to just make a move and score right over it, get the foul in Holloway and make it a three-point play. And that was a huge momentum shift right there. And then going on the other end, there's no interior force for Alabama. There's no post scoring. Everything is perimeter centric. And that's part of Nate Oates' system. That he runs an NBA style type of system, and it works because he surrounds the athletes that he has at big guys like Amori and Nelson with great shooters and great guards. And that's what he has this year. But that's not going to match up well with a team that can beat you not only in every way possible, but especially on the inside and abusing those bigs who aren't good perimeter defenders. And I think the only other team in the, not just the SEC, but the country that can match up with Auburn coming off the screen with their big guys is Florida. And they showed it last Saturday. Florida was the only team to do that. And Florida was the only team to also hedge the back screen. Auburn loves to run a back screen for their big guy off of a screen. And a lob was open for Jani Broome in this game where the ball spun around four times and spun out. But that's the exact play. And they did that against Purdue and Ohio State probably 40 times and scored every time. It's because there's not a guy who's – it's the guard who's screening, the point guard who's screening. So, it's Mark Sears, this guy. Say it's Denver Jones, is screening Alabama's big guy who's out there with Jani Broome or Dylan Cardwell, who's setting the screen for Chad Beckham-Mazzara. Ain't no way Mark Sears or Aiden Holloway is going to be able to bump Jani Broome enough for him to not be wide open under the basket. And Auburn's got good enough passers and big enough wings to get him the ball in that position. And the only team that was able to do that was Florida. And it was because of their size of their guards, even without Elijah Martin last Saturday in Neville Arena, that's how they were able to – that, and they made every shot. That's how they were able to beat Auburn. That's how you beat Auburn. But Alabama's not a team that's going to be able to match up with that. So everything needs to be on the perimeter. And when you don't have enough perimeter defenders, like when you've got Grant Nelson and Cliff Amore out there at the same time, Auburn's going to abuse that, especially when they've got Chaney Johnson on the floor. There was a time early in the first half, where Cliff Amore is guarding Chaney Johnson about mid-range, top of the key. And Cliff Amore takes three steps back while Chaney has the ball. And Chaney just shoots it over and makes it. That's just not reading the scouting report. That's just poor defense on Cliff Amore's part. And that cannot happen moving forward for Alabama against teams like Florida, Tennessee, Missouri coming up on Wednesday, and Auburn again and Neville.
I think games like this for teams like Alabama and Auburn, where you lose and you figure out, okay, this is the stuff we need to work on, is important, especially for Alabama going into their difficult schedule these last couple of games or last few games of the season. So you don't want to lose a game to your rival, but losing this type of game and seeing the deficiencies you have in your team is going to be important for Alabama to address them and fix them going forward. So let's move on from a college-centric based discussion here. Move on to the NBA, because you had All-Star Weekend this past Sunday. It was terrible. Absolutely terrible. 3 hours of basketball, 42 minutes were actually being played of a basketball game. That was the only 42 minutes of actual All-Star games. What was wrong with this format, guys?
Everything. Ever since Kobe Bryant retired, the NBA All-Star game and NBA All-Star weekend hasn't been the same. You think about it, that was the last, 2016 was the last real good NBA All-Star weekend. And it had an unbelievable dunk contest with Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine. It had Kobe and LeBron and Steph Curry and all those guys, Kevin Durant, those guys competing. It was a pickup game for the first few quarters, and then they pick it up. And it was East versus West, just like it should be, just like it always has been in the past. And it was fun. This isn't fun to watch. I don't want to tune into this. Not only is it not competitive, these guys are not showing any competitive spirit. You had a guy like LeBron James sit out. What are we even doing? You had a guy win the dunk contest, what, 3 straight times? He has 1 career NBA dunk. It's pathetic. And it's just a fraction of the reason the NBA's ratings are so low is stuff like this. They try to do too much, make stuff different, instead of just using what they've got right in front of them. They've got a bunch of all-star caliber players that even if you put money on the line, money to charity, or who cares? Who cares what you put on the line? Don't stop trying to do too much. Just let these guys go out there and play. That's the whole point of the All-Star game. It's the All-Star break. It's the midway break in the regular season. That's what it's for. And then these All-Stars get a chance to go and showcase and have fun at a weekend in a random city. This isn't fun. And the ratings are terrible. And Adam Silver's wondering, is it because we're shooting too many threes, or is it because there's too many free throws? No, it's because your media is doing too much. Tell them to stop. Go back to what we had with the East versus West. Just quit with the fan voting. Get the 15 best players in each conference. Let them play. Let them play for $10 million to your favorite charity. What's wrong with that? That's something I would tune into, because that is something I tuned into for many, many years growing up. And it was a lot of fun to watch. Now it's not.
Yeah, East versus West was a lot more entertaining. I went into this with hope that maybe there was going to be a fraction of entertainment. Nope. Mm-mm, nope. Throw that out the window. I wasn't watching basketball. I know that. I was just watching people shoot around at an open basket the entire time. There was no defense. I mean, they tried to even say they went out of their way. So, oh my God, there's so many blocks. There's so many blocks, guys. They're playing defense. No, they're not. No, they are not. And I really saw it like one of the first possessions of the first game where Jokic just basically said, you know what, y'all do whatever you want. And Jaren Jackson had a wide open lob in. And that was that. If you want a real solution, we're going to go back to East versus West. We're not going to wear all-star jerseys. We're going to wear your team jerseys. I think that's a big thing. I like that a lot more. You can still sell the memorabilia. You can still sell all-star jerseys, but I think they should wear their actual jerseys while at the all-star game. And the prize, well, let's look at the in-season tournament right now. The prize is $1 million split to the winning team. Well, let's get money involved. Let's say each person on the winning All-Star team gets $500K. I think that's a very good incentive to play for. Gray had a great incentive playing for charity. Play for some money. The NBA has loads of it. They're burning it. They're just burning it right now. So let's actually set this up to where it benefits not only the players, but it benefits the fans, because we don't want to watch this mess anymore. I think the style of play where there's actual competition. I'm not saying they had to go 100% the entire time, but when there's no defense being played, and if I wanted to go watch that, I could go to the local YMCA and go and watch it myself. I'm sure there's rec games going on in there all the time. And those people might actually give more effort. They might not be all-stars, but they'll give more effort than that.
You won't have to watch 80 minutes of ads.
Yeah, that is another thing we need to talk about. That is something we need to talk about. The number of ads, this is not only the NBA, but just sports in general. The number of ads I had to watch in order to actually tune into a game is unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's so stupid. I know that's the way they make money, but it is infuriating the number of times they get to commercial when they don't need to go to commercial. We can just keep playing the game. the NBA is it's dying. It is on life support right now. They need to do something to figure out how to get people more involved. And I think the biggest thing, I've watched several videos on this now, it's not even the product. It's not even who wins anymore. It's not how they compete. It's more centered around the fact that people gamble on this. And gambling is becoming more readily available to everyone in the country. And it is so easy to go and bet on a game now. And that's how the NBA is going to make their money. And that is why it's so important for them to wanting to expand to a city in Las Vegas, because guess what? Center of gambling right there. And yeah. This is all the NBA is about. It's not even about basketball anymore. It's how much money you can make. Ads and gambling, that is what they're going to make. They don't care about ticket sales. They don't care about anything else. It is just a small portion of the profit that these NBA teams bring in. And every single owner and GM of these franchises knows that. They know what sells. So we're not going to continuously act like they're trying to sell real product to us anymore, because that's long gone. The old days of the NBA actually being enjoyable are long gone. I will still go and watch the NBA. I will still go and root for the Thunder. I'll go root for my favorite team and tune in there. I'll spend my money to watch them. But other than that, I'm not going to put on ESPN and see the Spurs play the Bucks on a random Friday night because I want to. It's a bad product. I'm not going to watch it. I'm not going to watch any other game than my favorite team. That's just that.
NBA in general, it's rough to watch. You go to college basketball, every game you want to watch it, it's competitive. They're playing defense. We just talked about Alabama and Auburn, both teams playing hard defense, trying to get back into gaming for Alabama. And you go to the NBA, and there's just people hucking up three-pointers, no defense. Jokic just escorting people to the basket. I mean, it's terrible. It's a terrible product. This thing right here, the All-Star Game format they had, too much. I basically listened to 3 hours of Kevin Hart being the most unfunny person on the entire planet. You could look up Shay's reaction to him and Kevin Hart making fun of his mustard shoes. I mean, so unfunny. Completely unfunny. And then you have this 5-minute Mr. Beast challenge where Damian Lillard, you can tell he's not trying. And, you know, granted, he wants to get the guy the $100,000, but that's not getting me to watch it. The 15 minutes between a game two and game three, the music performances, can y'all tell me who they were of? The intro, the outro? I mean, no. They don't want me to make me tune in and watch. The 9-minute tribute to Inside the NBA, I get it. But there's a better time than the All-Star Game to have the tribute to Inside the NBA for 9 minutes. Way better time. 80 minutes of ads. Double the time of the gameplay. Awful. The product the NBA continually puts out there and expects people to tune in and watch it, it's atrocious. And Nathan hit the nail on the head. The only reason people even watch NBA games are two things. Betting, or because their favorite team's playing. And half the time, you can't even get to watch your favorite team because it's blacked out or you have to pay for a special packet. Yeah. I don't want to pay over $100 to get NBA League Pass to watch my team. I want to have the ability to pay for, okay, I want to pay for the Atlanta Hawks package and watch all their games this season. I want to pay for the Oklahoma City Thunder package. And Gray, I know you probably want to pay for it, but the Charlotte Hornets package, I want to pay for that.
You have to pay me.
But the MLB is the same way. You have to pay for certain things to watch teams. People don't want to pay so much money to watch their favorite team, even though they love them. People don't have endless amounts of money nowadays. College football, the reason people watch college football and college basketball is because the games are readily available. I can go to SEC Network and Alabama's playing a lesser opponent, or they're playing an SEC opponent that's not great. It's going to be on SEC Network or ESPN Plus or something. It's readily available and somewhat inexpensive if you have YouTube TV or cable or whatever.
And a way better NBA,
product. Yeah, and the NBA, MLB, NFL has gone way too much, and let's put it on Peacock. Let's put it on Paramount Plus. Let's put it on Amazon Prime. Again, people don't have thousands of dollars to sink in to watch the shitty product you put on the court, the field, whatever. I'm sorry, I'm not going to watch. I'm not going to invest in YouTube TV or whatever to go just watch the All-Star Game. I personally didn't reorganize my day to, okay, tonight I'm going to sit down and I'm going to watch 3 hours of the All-Star Game. I don't think there was anybody in the country that said that statement. No. And you know why? Because it's a terrible product. And it's the same way with the NFL and the Pro Bowl. I'm not setting aside my Sunday to watch a flag football game. I'm not. No. It's awful. And they're not doing anything about it. Adam Silver's approach to changing the NBA and trying to fix it is let's add more tournaments. Let's add a play-in tournament. Let's add the in-season tournament. Let's add an all-star tournament. It doesn't fix anything. It hasn't. The only thing it does is line your pockets with money. Fans see through the bullshit. They know what's happening. The product is getting worse and worse. No defense is not getting played. The refs are getting more ticky-tack. The NBA, not only with the All-Star game, but in general, has gotten terrible. The players have gotten way better, but the product has somehow gotten way worse, which continues to baffle me day after day. It's how you get better players, but your product gets worse.
It's hard to say more than that.
Well, that's all Tommy have for today. Thank you for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.